Blog Talk Radio.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repair. Wandering in my desert, your oasis appears. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me I need to know.
I've always enjoyed that song. That's actually some of Colette's music, and her link to the music is on our website at spiritualconnectionsradio.com. If you ever get a chance, if you're just starting to learn meditation, she has her Grace CD, and it actually has two CDs in it. One of it has a bunch of songs like what you just heard, where there's a lot of vocal. And then she has a whole CD that's just different types of sounds on each track for meditation. So if you're looking for some music for your meditation practice where you just want some background like ocean sound or anything like that, make sure to check out her stuff. It's absolutely amazing. And just love her work and everything. And make sure to check out her work. And so with that, I'd like to welcome you to another night of the Men's Spiritual Hour. It's always amazing to have this show on. We used to do it more often, but we're down to about once a month now. And between this and the other shows, we're up to almost 3,000 shows since Spiritual Connections Radio started. And, you know, we have a number of different people that host shows during the month. You can find out all about those shows and the different people and the replays and everything by going to our website, spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, I hope everybody's enjoying the summer. We were just kind of talking about it during the radio show. I'm down here in Orlando, Florida. I don't think it's as warm here as it is in Texas, but we definitely been having our hot weather here, and of course humidity, which is normal for Florida. And if anybody has spent any time vacationing down here, you know that we're famous for our once-a-day thunderstorm, which lasts anywhere from an hour to 2 hours. And I have to say, out of traveling around different parts of the country, this is the only place that I've been that when it rains, it's like the whole sky opens up. I mean, you can have your windshield wipers going as quick as possible, and you basically sometimes have to just pull over because the rain is so hard. So, like I said, I hope everybody's enjoying their summer, and I'm going to go ahead and bring Mike in. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mark.
Always great to have you on. Mike, why don't you go ahead and give out your website, and I'm going to talk about your website for a minute.
Sure. It's www.mikesnidercc.com.
Yeah, so if nobody's familiar with Mike's work, I originally got introduced to some of Mike's work when I was working with my friend Brigida up in New Jersey. She has the Lightbridge Center, which is absolutely amazing center. You might be familiar with her and Mike from the radio show that they do once a month for where they play music, which is what Mike does, because he channels music. And then we have Brigida come on, and she channels Saint Germain. And it's absolutely amazing to have someone actually channel an ascended master. With all the wisdom and the fact that we allow callers to call in to actually listen to the show, to you know, to that, but also to have a caller be able to call in and actually talk to the Ascended Master and ask questions about life. It's quite more than a normal reading, that's for sure. So if you get a chance, check out Mike's website. His link is up on our website also, so if you didn't catch it, you can go down to the St. Germain Radio Show and you'll see the link for his website. He has some absolutely amazing CDs of music. How many CDs are you up to now, Mike?
Oh, boy, I think there's about five or six on there. I just put my newest one, Release, online now. I never had it online before.
Wow, yeah. So, and if you can listen to the music, it's very nice to listen to. You can use it for meditation. You can also use it just to have something quiet in the background while you're reading or doing something like relaxing. And Mike does this amazing thing, which I can talk to firsthand because I've experienced it a number of times, and that is he does it through Skype also, which is just about as good. But I've done a lot of stuff one-on-one with him where he has me lay down on a massage table. He starts by just basically touching you so he can feel your energy, and then he starts channeling music that matches your energy, and then there's this dance of your energy versus the music. So the music brings your energy up, your vibration up, and then because your body changes its vibration, the music starts to change. So it becomes this dance of vibrational energy and music that's actually channeled. And just an amazing experience. He gives you an audio of it, this custom music for you. He does like a little mini reading, and just amazing work. It's I have so much fun, you know, working with Mike and also with Brigida and all the different other people that I come across, including all the great guests that we have on the shows, including our guests today. So with that, Mike, why don't you go ahead and do an intro, and let's bring our guest on.
Okay. So our guest tonight is going to be Jim Lansford, PhD. Jim is out in the Rocky Mountains where he lives with his soulmate of 27 years, Lynn Lansford. And Jim's a husband, a father, engineer, teacher, carpenter, mechanic, general handyman, and part-time philosopher. His day job is over at Cambridge Silicon Radio, which is a wireless chip company based in Cambridge, England. And Jim's been in the technology field for over 30 years. So, Jim, boy, that's quite a lineup you got there. It's great to have you on tonight.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on with you guys. It's a nice change of pace from how I would normally be spending my days on conference calls. So, again, it's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to a great hour with you guys.
Yeah, it's great. It's great having you on the show, Jim. So, you know, let's go back to the beginning. I mean, you sound like you wear quite a few different hats in your life, and I guess I was wondering, you know, when we talk about, I know we're going to be talking about A Course in Miracles, and we're going to talk about the collaboration work between you and your wife, which is amazing when you can get two people that can be on the same page spiritually. But before we get to that, I mean, you know, give us a little background. How did you get started?
Well, I guess one of the things that's been my path isn't too unusual, but in some ways I think it is. I grew up in Northeast Alabama, and my father was a Southern Baptist minister. So I grew up in an environment very, very evangelical, very, very heavily dosed in fear and guilt. And I just found that it wasn't really something. Trying to scare the hell out of people was just not a very satisfying spiritual thing for me. There are a lot of people that I think, you know, they it's tradition and they have learned to walk that path. But for me, I felt like it was too much fear and too much guilt. And so actually for many years, I just turned my back on religion entirely. But what I found was that, especially as I got into my 20s and into my mid to late 20s, that there is something I think that calls us to think about the bigger picture of where we fit in the bigger picture of life. And so I felt like there was a spiritual need that I had, but I didn't feel like traditional religion was the way to get there, because there was too much about control and fear and guilt, and that was kind of what attracted me to become a student of Course in Miracles, is that, you know, everything we do is either out of fear or out of love, and so it really helps instruct and helps me to see why people do the things they do. It gives me a chance to connect with my spiritual side without a lot of the trappings of control and fear that come from a lot of the traditional religious experience.
You know, we would normally kind of go around and talk about a couple different things, but I want to kind of circle back on this really quick, and that is, you know, with the fact that you've kind of taken this path in your life to kind of be spiritual and to really have that connection with Source and with God and everything that comes from a non-dogma-based kind of position, what is it like when you get together for family stuff and you have a chance to sit down with your father?
Oh, my gosh. Well, my father's been passed for about almost 30 years now. And that was – I think that's something – and it's a lot of us men have to deal with, is that there are a lot of issues we never reconcile with our fathers. And that was certainly – I was never able to reconcile – you know, he was never going to see my path as being one that is – that's good, right for me, right? For him – it was always very black and white, and I always saw spirituality as much more nuanced and shades of gray. And so we never were able to reconcile that. I mean, it was one of those things that I think I found there was a period of time, especially after he in my early 20s, where I just had tried to have as little interaction with it as possible, because I knew it was going to be an unpleasant experience, because all I was going to get was a guilt trip. And I just didn't want that in my life. I didn't feel like that was a very healthy thing for me to subject myself to. So I think like a lot of young men, we kind of go off on our own path. And it's great for the people that are able to circle back with their parents and reconcile the big schisms and the big differences that arise in your teenage years. In my case, it just wasn't possible. I found that I really ended up kind of, I sort of informally wrote letters after he passed to try to explain myself. But I knew that there was no way during his lifetime that I was ever going to be able to have him see my point of view. It just, my point of view was always going to be wrong, and it was as simple as that. And so I had to go my own path, and that's something that I had to really come to peace with, is that I don't have I don't necessarily have to conform to the religious training that I had, but I can be at peace with being different and learn not to feel guilty about disappointing and not really having that in common with them. And I don't, you know, my siblings, we get along, we're civil to each other. But there's definitely a schism there, because for them, again, it is very black and white, and I just don't see it that way.
Yeah, I've done a lot of coaching with different people from the South who were raised Southern Baptist. I was raised what you would call Northern Baptist, which I like to say is Baptist without all the guilt. but to finish my thought in that area, most of the time what I just simply teach people who come from that position is that the only thing you need to understand about God is that he's unconditionally loving. And I think that's a big shift if they're willing to take it.
It is a big shift, right? And so much of what I grew up with was very conditional, right? That if you don't believe in the salvation, the dogma, if you will, that as presented to you from the pulpit, then you are eternally damned. It's a very guilt. It's a very conditional love.
Well, I have something I want to share that came from Facebook on a conversation the other day. But before I do that, hey, Mike, what questions do you have?
Oh, well, Jim, I had gone to a few Course in Miracles meetings myself, so I have a little bit of understanding of it, and it is pretty amazing information. My question for you is, have you had, in your group, have you had a lot of people that have come from the traditional church background, and they've come to a point where, you know, they're kind of either tired of it or frustrated with it, or they're looking for something more? And do you tend to get those kind of people in your Course for Miracle groups? Like,
yeah,
would
yeah,
that
we do.
Be the first step that they take sometimes?
You know, it's interesting. My wife actually comes from a Unitarian background. Her father was one of the founders of the Unitarian Church in Stillwater, Oklahoma. So she did not come from a dogmatic background. But we have a lot of people in our Course in Miracles group that they jokingly refer to themselves as recovering Catholics or recovering evangelicals or whatever. So, and I think that's it. Is that they've found that spirituality is something that's really, the analogy I sometimes use is it's kind of like going to the store and buying something off the rack versus tailoring your own, right? You can have someone hand you a dogma and say, this is it, take it or leave it. Or you can custom tailor your spirituality to what meets your own emotional and spiritual needs. A lot of people in our Course in Miracles class needed a break from that dogmatic tradition. They just found it wasn't serving them well. It wasn't bringing them peace.
Yeah. So now when you say Unitarian, is that the same as the Unity churches?
No, it's a little different. Unitarian,
okay, because that's where I have attended. Is it a Unity church? Yeah.
Unitarians actually, in the U.S. anyway, originated in the Northeast in the Boston area. Thomas Jefferson was a Unitarian. That's probably one of the more famous early Unitarians. So for my wife, a more tolerant and a more spiritual, although Unitarians tend to be very very intellectual in their orientation towards religion, so there's sort of the joke about them being God's frozen people. So they generally don't appeal to the spiritual and emotional side of religion. But that's why my wife really found that Course in Miracles is appealing, because you connect with Source and you feel that connection to Source. You feel that you can, as you study more and more principles of the Course in Miracles, you realize that we're all part of an ultimate source of unconditional love, and it's a very powerful thing, and it's more than just the head; it's the head and the heart.
Yeah, and I must say that I had an experience the same myself, where when I was younger, I had tried some different churches, and I had gone along with the people pretty well, but when it came down to the actual dogma that I didn't agree with, and I spoke out about some of my belief systems, you know, and, you know, similar to Course in Miracles and even belief in reincarnation and stuff, you know, they were kind of stunned, and they're like, well, you know, and I, you know, when I parted ways with them politely, they're like, okay, well, we'll pray for you, you know, because in their minds I was going way down below, you know. So I've since been involved with the Metaphysical Church. They have something called Metaphysical Universal Ministries, and they do a lot of wonderful things there. They welcome people from all backgrounds, and they also put on a spiritual expo twice a year in our area here in Pennsylvania, which houses like 150 different kind of spiritual workers and vendors and things like that. And
wow.
So that is just amazing for that to come out of an entity that's a church, you know, that,
yep.
You know, and I just am really very grateful to be part of that here. And I think, you know, if more people had that opportunity to be more part of open organizations like that, it could be amazing.
Yeah, well, it does sound wonderful. And you mentioned Unity earlier. And, of course, Unity is a non-dogmatic church.
Yes.
And we were regular attendees at the Unity Church in Austin when we lived there before we moved here to Colorado. And they have a couple of different Course in Miracles classes there that are sponsored by the church. And yeah, we've had some wonderful friends who are members of the Unity Church in Northwest Atlanta, at Austin. So,
okay, Mark,
that's great. Yeah, so you know, one of the things that was interesting, I always kind of like jump around Facebook and part about, you know, 7 or 8 groups, and one of them is called the Teal Tribe, and in the Teal Tribe, we have had a discussion thread that's been running up there for a little bit, which was based on the idea that, you know, if you're spiritual and you have different gifts, or what we would call gifts of the Spirit, do you essentially at that point basically not have a connection with God anymore? So, you know, you know, kind of talking about it from my own life experience, I know, you know, I was brought up Baptist and then, you know, got away from the church for a number of years, and then I spent about 20 years, 25 years in the ELCA Lutheran Church as an elder and a leader. And from there, I started my spiritual journey, you know, starting with, you know, intuition and then mediumship and then going into healing. And, you know, these days, most of my work these days has to do with belief systems coaching and being involved with a group called the Oneness Movement. So, you know, with this kind of path, I noticed in my own personal journey that, you know, I came from a very strong scripture background, very heavily involved in the church, kind of went all the way through the Lutheran path, and then at a certain point decided, all right, you know, I'm going to go ahead and start to, you know, I got into all the spirituality, which kind of shifted a lot of things. But, you know, for me, even as I went through spirituality, I had a very strong connection to Christ. And, you know, God along that path also. So for me, as much as I got into spiritual and I was kind of like, all right, I'm going to wash my hands of the whole dogma-based thing, for me personally, there was no part of that journey where I ever put down my connection with Christ and with God. So, you know, it was kind of a very interesting topic. We had a number of people discussing it, and it's very interesting that I want to say that my spiritual journey or getting involved in spirituality, if anything, really enhanced my connection with God. And that came from the fact that for a lot of different reasons, I was able to validate and prove that there is life after death, that there is a heaven, that there is, you know, that there is another side of this beautiful, you know, equation and stuff like that. So for me, when I got into spirituality, there was two key things that came to the surface for me. One of them was a stronger connection with God. And the second was a more stronger feeling of love for everybody. I think, you know, especially in all the years that I was in corporate and in New York, I think New York could do it to you on its own. You kind of get into that mentality of it's me and forget everybody else. I mean, as much as you have a lot of loved ones in your life. And I think when I got into spirituality, it was kind of like an expansion of, okay, now I kind of feel responsible for the earth. I feel responsible for all the people around me. I love everybody. And there's that bigger responsibility beyond of, well, I don't want to sin in this lifetime and be held accountable, or I don't want to have to deal with karma or something like that. It's more of, well, you know, this is all about all of us working together. So, you know, with that, before I go to you, Jim, I mean, what's your thoughts about this, Mike?
Well, I definitely agree. And, you know, in my background, you know, I was able to get into the metaphysical world very early in life, as early as maybe my early teens. And I had started with counseling after my adopted father had passed when I was young. And anyhow, I had gotten readings very early on and took metaphysical classes. So I pretty much have been kind of brought up on, I mean, my earlier life, I was brought up in the church between like a UCC church and going to Catholic church with relatives. But when I got into the metaphysical part of it, you know, I really did believe in reincarnation. I really do believe in karma and so forth. So, you know, I really do think that we're just all here in many, many lifetimes, and we're just always constantly learning lessons over and over, and some things that we don't get quite right, that we don't get the lesson other lifetimes, it comes back to be presented with us. And I think we do reincarnate in similar soul groups. You know, a lot of people, when they've gone through past life regression, have talked about how, you know, they feel that, you know, their mother in this lifetime could have been their sister in a previous life. Or the most interesting one I find is that when you're the mother and child, or father and child in this lifetime, but the child this time around had been the parent before. Because, you know, don't you ever hear that sometimes when a father and child or mother and child are together and they say, well, who's the parent here? You know, you or me. And, you know, it's because that child had that experience of being the parent before for that same soul group, you know. So I really find all that stuff very fascinating. And, you know, I do agree with you, Mark, that there's definitely karma and there's definitely a lot of things between lifetimes and that we work through, and that, you know, why else would we all be born on Earth here? Some people with unfair advantages, some people with more than fair advantages. You know, I just think that whatever experiences we're supposed to work at next, we kind of jump into that in this life.
What do you think, Jim? Kind of to redirect the question back a little bit, and that is, do you feel that people who get into spirituality either have a stronger bond with Christ or God, or basically kind of say, okay, I'm spiritual and, you know, I'm even willing to kind of even separate myself from that?
So I'll tell a story. You asked earlier about my relationship with my family. I have an older brother that I can sort of discuss religion and spirituality with. And it's very illuminating along this line of discussion, because he asked me about, he says, well, you know, who tells you what to believe? And I said, well, nobody tells me what to believe. He says, well, don't you have a book or a minister or somebody who tells you what to believe? And I said, no. I said, you know, my belief is that, you know, we have a spiritual path that we are here to learn lessons for, and it is to cause us to grow spiritually. We don't have to have someone to be an intermediary between us and God or us and each other. You know, we don't have to have a priest to interpret and tell us what is holy and what is connected. This is something that we are here to learn the lessons on our own. And in our class, in our Course in Miracles class, Lynn and I talk about pop quizzes that we all get every week, and usually sometimes even every day, we'll have opportunities to learn, right? And one of the phrases I use often in a class is, I've done three startup companies, and I always tell my students when I teach in my classes in Boulder that there is no such thing as failure. There are only opportunities to learn, and it's absolutely the case. Is that we learn, we are here to learn lessons. We are here to grow spiritually. We are here to try to create our own heaven inside us. And we don't have to have someone else to tell us that there's a certain set of dogma that we have to believe to achieve that. It is through our own spiritual growth.
Thank you. So, you know, kind of bringing together the team of you and your wife, I mean, how did you meet? What was that like? And what is it like to walk the path with somebody that you can actually teach? Because I know both of you collaborate on the Course in Miracles that you do out in Colorado.
So it is interesting. I you know, as I mentioned, I kind of had my midlife crisis at 28. I was working in Florida, actually over in Melbourne, and I was on the fast track to get into management. I had a house near the beach and a really nice car. And I decided this was spiritually just something that the job I had was just not very spiritually fulfilling. It just wasn't where I wanted to be long term. So I quit my job. I sold my house. I packed up and I moved to Stillwater, Oklahoma, because there's a professor there who I just adored. He's a wonderful man. And I had walked away from religion at that point. I just had repudiated spirituality, religion. I didn't want any part of it. When I got there, I realized that there was something I needed to feel connected to. So I started going to this Unitarian church that my wife's father had founded. So I actually met him before I met her. She was in a bad marriage at the time and wasn't able to attend. And so I got connected with folks that were very open-minded, very tolerant, non-dogmatic, and it was very refreshing. And eventually, my wife had gotten out of her marriage and started attending a church again. That's when we met. And we both became students of the Course after some fairly we got married in 1987, and we had gone through some fairly traumatic experiences with an adoption a few years later. And it really called us to come into question, you know, who we were and what we're spiritually and So we had a friend here in Colorado who had been teaching Course in Miracles for a number of years. She had introduced us to it, and it just seemed natural. The concepts were very, very easy. I mean, they just seemed like this is the way things ought to be. And so we became students of the Course, and then starting around 1998 or so, started teaching a Course in Miracles in Oklahoma, actually. And then we moved to Austin, taught classes there for a few years, and we've been teaching Course in Miracles classes here. But I find it really helps me not only in my relationship with people that I meet every day, because every encounter is a holy encounter, but that it helps me in my work world, that you can realize that when people attack you, it's not about you. That in the world of ego, people are coming at you either from a place of love or a place of fear, and fear is just a call for love. These are powerful concepts, and like I said, it's been very fulfilling for me to come, since I had walked away from religion, to come back to something that's spiritual without being dogmatic, and it's not tied to an organized religion.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, and that is, you don't have to be Christian to take A Course in Miracles. You can actually come from any religious background.
There are Buddhist concepts in Course in Miracles. There are certainly Christian concepts in Course in Miracles. There are even Hindu concepts in Course in Miracles. We joke and tell our class that you could actually rewrite the Course in Miracles book, which is kind of written from a Christian perspective, but you could rewrite it from a Buddhist perspective, and it would still make perfect sense.
That's cool. Go ahead, Mike.
So, Jim, what would you say to somebody who, like, if you kind of wanted to help somebody who was right on the fence there, that they kind of wanted to, try other options, or they were starting to get frustrated with their normal upbringing that they had in their church or belief system, if they would come to you to say, there's got to be more to life than this, or there's got to be, something else out there. What would you kind of say to them, like, as an introduction to introduce them to the Course in Miracles, or just introduce them to the open philosophy of life in general, to try to get their feet wet so that they would feel comfortable?
Well, it's not necessarily a path that everyone wants to follow, right? I mean, in fact, even in A Course in Miracles, it says there are many paths, but we are all seeking the same destination. And I think one of the things that I find is some people take great comfort in having a dogma given to them that says, if you believe this, then you will have salvation. You will, and of course, in Miracles, actually, salvation means healing. But that if you believe these sets of things, the Apostles' Creed, if you will, if you believe that, then there are people who take great, find that very comforting and take great security in that. If you're not comfortable, however, with the idea of having a dogma that you can't question handed to you, then you may be open to exploring your own spiritual path, and a spiritual path that is done in recognizing that we are all have a spark of the divine within us, that we are all connected, and we are all connected to ultimate source, and that we are here to learn lessons, but to live in peace and in love, and to recognize that our encounters with others are holy encounters, and that our path is one of growing spiritually, but not necessarily signing up to a certain dogma. If you're comfortable with that, if you're comfortable with making life a journey rather than having beliefs that you can sign on the dotted line and say, I'll accept these without question, if you're willing to question, if you're willing to be open, if you're willing to look at life as a marvelous spiritual journey, then you may be open to something that's more like a non-dogmatic approach, or just a spiritual path. But it may not be for everybody, but it's certainly one that allows you to tailor your own spirituality to your own spiritual path to what you believe fits you. And it's to me, it's very empowering.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, and I think that you take those concepts beyond, like the work that I do with the music, when people get to that point too, where they take those concepts that you're speaking of and then take it into meditation. You know, I think there's definitely a difference between just this prayer where you might be praying to God per se or asking for help with a situation, but then, you know, when you go into meditation, then it's more like a conversation. Then you're getting some answers back. You know, whether you believe that you're directly communicating with God or that you have guardian angels or what it may be. But I think that's I've seen that when not just in myself but other people have made that transition out of their traditional belief system. Then when they've opened themselves up to meditation, then it's very powerful that you're kind of really going within for the answers rather than just taking into account what everybody else says. You know, even I'm sure if people come to your Course in Miracles and they go through some of the different chapters and think about what's being said, if you come home and take it home into a quiet space and quiet time and let it kind of run, the knowledge kind of run through your body or just sit in peace and quiet, you know, thoughts can pop up and it can kind of confirm things for the person. It can kind of make things a little clearer. And I believe that's, you know, another good way that we can get like certain visions of different things that help us in our life by taking that quiet time or listening to soft music.
Oh, yeah.
But I just don't see that being promoted as much in the traditional church system. I do know that there's some churches now that are being a little more proactive in like meditation and stuff, but I haven't seen it too often yet. And I just think if that concept was brought in even to the traditional religious sects, that it could be very, very powerful. I just think that meditation in general is just a very powerful thing.
You know, Lynn does a meditation class on Thursday nights, and I the way that she expresses it to the people in her class is that prayer is talking to God, meditation is letting God talk back to you, and it really
yeah.
is. You were spot
yeah.
on. And I think, like you say, it is very, it's very centering. It's very, it really helps keep you centered when you can sit back and listen to what that ultimate source of unconditional love is telling you. I want to tell you guys a story along these lines because to me it's very indicative of how powerful this can be in your life. Several years ago, I had a woman who was working for me who was really having a rough time at work. She was having difficulty getting along with some of the other folks at work, and she would come into my office just almost in tears and close the door. And I tried to talk to her about that when people attack you, it's not about you. You know, it's classic Course in Miracles stuff. And so she was telling me one day, she came in and she said she was had been going to a spiritual group at her church. I think she was Presbyterian Methodist, I don't remember. But anyway, there was a woman's group that really was doing a lot of spiritual work and meditation on Sunday evenings. And she says, yeah, I'm really, you know, at my encouragement, I was telling her, you need to get connected to something other than work so that you don't feel like your whole life revolves around this place. And so she started going to this women's group. And she came into me one day at work and she says, you know, I really, really love going to my Sunday evening women's spirituality class at this church because it really helps me get ready to come back to the real world on Monday. I said, you got it completely backwards. I said, when you're doing your spiritual work, you're in the real world. When you come into this office on Monday, this is the dream world, the nightmare world. This is the world of the ego. And I said, it is only because you can go spend that time in the real world of meditation that allows you and empowers you to come into this place and not get beat up by it. I said, so you need to think of it the other way around. It is that connection to the real world, the real spiritual world, that helps you to be able to make a walk through this world of the ego.
Yeah, I really agree with that too. You know, and they say so much of what we deal with is an illusion, you know, that petty things we get upset over is more of an illusion than it is like real, like you say, in the ethers and where we meditate. Yeah.
Because we play all sorts of movies in our heads about the past, but in fact, that's all the past is all an illusion. It doesn't exist anymore.
So, you know, you guys brought up a really good point that I want to kind of run with, and that is, you know, I think as I coach different people one of the things that I notice is that it feels like everybody's trying to exit the business world in whatever capacity they're in. And they're trying to get into, quote-unquote, a spiritual job. And, you know, I was kind of the same mindset myself. I was like, well, I want to get out of the corporate world, and I want to get back, you know, I want to get into a spiritual job. I'm just going to do healing work, and, you know, that's going to be my full-time employment. And, you know, one of the things that I realized, you know, for me, you know, we've been talking a lot about me doing full circles, you know, because I was in the corporate world for years, and then I took a few years off and then did a lot of spirituality and launched a number of businesses, including the radio network. And, you know, coming out of that, basically ended up going back into the spiritual world. And I mean back into the business world. And, you know, one of the things that I would say is that, you know, if you're doing your if you are doing your regular full-time job, that really is your spiritual work. And I think a lot of people are trying to not even be in that. So I'll give a good example. I have a friend of mine who, you know, basically spends a lot of her time working with children in the school system and does absolutely amazing work. I mean, she works probably with 30 troubled children every year and, you know, just does absolutely amazing work. And, you know, she keeps on telling me, I want to get out of this. And I'm gonna go get a job doing, you know, readings, and that's, you know, what I want to do for my life. And I say, well, you know, if you compare it, you're talking about going and doing some readings, which, you know, is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, the question would be is, are you better served in helping people and bringing your light to the world? Are you better served by doing some readings for some people who basically just kind of believe that stuff anyways? Or are you better off in the school system working with 30 children who are going to go out into the world and do whatever? And, you know, sometimes people need to see that shift, and I'm just wondering what both of you think about that.
Yeah, so, I agree with you. I used to really feel uncomfortable that what the work that I was doing was – in fact, as I mentioned, I kind of had my midlife crisis at 28 because I felt like the job I had was kind of soul-sucking, right? It was just – it was not spiritual. It just really was spiritually toxic. And so I kind of, like you, have struggled with this over the years that, wow, I really need to be doing something spiritually fulfilling. You know, I used to want to be a full-time university professor so I could spend my summers building orphanages in Guatemala or whatever. And what I've come to realize is that I can actually be a spiritual light in the world of the ego and make a difference that way. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be something that's maybe some people might not see as rewarding as, like you say, working with handicapped kids or whatever. But it's different, right? You can be spiritual in whatever job you have, and you can have a job that I mean, jobs run the gamut, right? And people say, well, you know, what I'm doing is not very spiritually satisfying. I think it is. Jobs are spiritually satisfying to the extent you want them to be. If you want to be a messenger if you want to be a beacon of love and peace and joy in this world, you can do that doing any job you want to. And you may not get as much back, but in fact, it should be all about unconditional love. You don't know when you put energy out there, you don't know where that energy is going. All you know is I can be a beacon. I can radiate love, and that will go into all sorts of corners of the world that I don't even know about. But it's one of the reasons why I teach part-time at the university is I want to be a force for showing people indirectly ultimate source and how that can make you a peaceful, joyful person. And I don't have to hit them over the head with it. I mean, if I started going to the office in England and talking of Course in Miracles principles, then people would think I'd lost it. So you have to do it in an indirect and more subtle way. But you can be a spiritual person in lots of different jobs. You don't want to be a spiritual person in a spiritually toxic job. But there are a lot of jobs where a lot of times I end up mediating between people with big egos because I'm not ego invested in things. I try to keep my ego out of it. I'm looking for ways to help people come to agreement. And the thing I remind my coworkers a lot about is the people that push our buttons are our greatest teachers, right? It forces us to figure out how to choose a peaceful solution. I can do that without hitting them over the head with the Course in Miracles book.
I agree with you too, because I do IT and computers for a school system myself for many years, and whereas I do desire to do more of my spiritual work on, you know, if not a full-time basis, even on a much more basis where I get to do it more often, I do try to sit back and recognize and feel blessed for the job that I do have and all the wonderful people I work with and being the IT guy, you know, when I finally show up after 2 days and fix somebody's printer, you know, right away you're the hero of the day, you know. So people, it's nice to see, because my department especially is very short staffed, so, you know, we're always very busy trying to keep up with things, and just seeing the appreciation that most people have is rewarding. And then a lot of times I just get wonderful compliments, because I try to take care of people as soon as I can, and I try to be, you know, polite about it and joke around with them a little bit. And again, I agree with what you're saying, Jim, too. I've been the mediator between big egos many times, you know, where people want to start kind of stabbing verbal knives at each other and everything. And I think the biggest compliment I've gotten was earlier this summer. I was away from work for a couple weeks with dealing with a relative that had passed away. And during the time I was out, you know, the people at work had said that, wow, you know, the whole time we were out, nobody went out to lunch, you know, nobody was really laughing that much. Oh, we just so missed you, you know. And so that just really meant a lot to me, because I really do try to be the bringer of the peace or add a little humor to try to lighten up the mood between people. Because, again, when those egos get in fire, everybody can just be so serious and who roars the loudest wins kind of thing, you know. And so, yeah, I totally agree with both of you.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, I don't like to get this lost in the process, so I'll make sure to hit it now so we don't forget. But, so far in life, what do you think is the biggest lesson you've had?
Well, I think there's a couple of big lessons. One of the things I mention a lot in our class is that I am learning to see the perfection in every moment. It's a nice affirmation that we all have taken different paths to get to where we are. There are times that we look back in our past and wish we had made different choices. But in fact, there was a woman in our class who was a while back who was complaining about how that she felt like she was just felt like she had no direction to her life. And I said, I want you to turn that around. That we all have a path. And I said, you may feel like that you were a pinball just bouncing around on the pinball table from one thing to the other. But in fact, there is a path that you have taken that has led you to this point in your life. And if you believe in this moment that things are perfect, then that path was the path you had to take to get here. And so that's one of the things that I think I've learned in my life, is that there are choices that, you know, I think we all say, well, if I'd made a different choice in the past. But in fact, you didn't. And so if the past is really an illusion and you believe that there is perfection in this moment, then whatever happened in the past, path was the right thing to get you to this point of perfection in your life. So that's one thing I've learned, which has been really useful for me. And the other one I think I mentioned already is that there is no such thing as failure, that absolutely okay to take emotional risks, to take spiritual risks in your life, because all you are doing is learning, and you're going to get pop quizzes along the way, and sometimes you'll fail those, but in fact, they aren't really failures. They are really opportunities to learn. And so you go, oh, I could have reacted to this situation with more love or more peace, or not been so upset by it. But in fact, I'll keep getting those pop quizzes until I learn my lessons. in this lifetime, in this path. So that's the other thing is I look back and I learned some very valuable lessons and have had some very wonderful people enter my life to help me to the point of seeing that there is no such thing as failure. There's only opportunities to learn and grow.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
So, Jim, I think what I'd also like to mention is you've been in technology for many years between computers and communications, and
I have a doctorate in electrical engineering. I mostly worked in wireless communications over the last 35 years, actually. So that's my company actually is the world's largest maker of Bluetooth chips. So I spend a lot of time doing wireless things, and I work a lot in standards body. That's where I run into some of the biggest ego clashes that I run into, is I deal a lot with standards bodies in the world of Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
Yeah, now have you ever found it fascinating just how much technology mirrors the human body, the brain being probably the best supercomputer we could ever ask for? it just boggles my mind when I'm sitting there or designing a network and thinking of different pathways and different ways to get data to different places. And it's just amazing how it's like, wow, it's like, somebody must have just studied the body or opened up a brain many years ago and figured out, hey, we can do this, artificially through a computer.
I'm reading one of Dr. Joe Dispenza's books right now. And he's done, of course, a lot of work in neuroscience. It is amazing. It's fascinating to me how that we keep trying to replicate the way that our brains work, but our brains are phenomenal. They're three-dimensional holographic processors that can have an immense number of connections between all these neurons. It's just phenomenal to think about that we can even build machines that can replicate some fraction of that kind of capability. It is, like you say, I did my PhD thesis was trying just to replicate the way that the cochlea interprets senses sound and tried to model the cochlea and the way that our brains work in processing sound. Just that small piece of it was just an immense task. I really bit off one small, tiny bit of it. So it is phenomenal what we have, and it is amazing that technology can even approach some of the things that we are capable of doing every day, and we do it effortlessly and without even realizing it.
Yeah, and the one thing I find amazing when it comes to that is just all the amazing healing modalities there are out there that all go according to the different senses, whether it's a healing touch modality or it's reflexology or massage, or if it's, aromatherapy, where you're healing through smell, and then sound and vibration, which I get into, which is just amazing. And it's like, there's like the other thing is it kind of applies to everything in life we were talking about. There's so many different ways, almost like so many roads or detours to get to the same place. There's just so many different modalities you can use to help people get to that relaxed state of mind, to get to that center point, And I just find that fascinating in being in the healing world.
I mentioned Dr. Joe Dispenza. The book I'm reading of his is called You Are the Placebo, and it's all about how that so much of our healing is in our minds that we can we have this tremendous energy that we can focus. We have tremendous biochemistry in our bodies that if we are attentive and we focus ourselves, we can do miraculous healing. Without any medications, without any pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, there's also another woman named Dr. Lisa Rinkin, I think her name is.
Yep,
if you've ever heard of her,
I just saw her in Denver at the You Can Do It thing a couple months ago.
Oh, okay, Rinkin. Yeah, I was wanting to read her book too. I've seen her talks on the TED, and another
yeah,
person
she's,
that's
she's
very
amazing
big
as well.
That.
yep, absolutely. I absolutely believe. I mean, this all this work that's going on, and even being able to rewire your DNA. You can actually flip some of the switches in your DNA through the power of intention and meditation. This is phenomenal stuff.
And I think those DNA or those thought patterns also can transmit long distance to people too. So, I mean, I can get in a whole other subject, but, you know, I think when you look at the power of intention in our brains and the brain waves that we're sending out, that it really has an effect where we can line up things to have in our life when we maintain a positive attitude and we're very adamant about what we want to happen. And sometimes there's things that we work out more in brain waves than we do in the physical, and then the physical just happens to come upon us. You know, it's like a big puzzle that just all pieces together from one dimensional space of our body to the physical space, you know.
Like I said earlier, we project energy with our thoughts, with what we, you know, how we, even when we meditate or whatever, we project energy, and you just don't know where that energy is going to go. You can't always predict it or control it, but you can try to focus it. And I think the people who are real spiritual masters are the ones who really are able to tap into that and make it do miraculous things. But you're right. I do believe we project energy. We project energy and in ways we don't even realize.
Yeah, it reminds me of a great book series. I think I've talked to you about it before, Mark. Is called The Masters of the Far East. And just a wonderful book series that covers a lot of that.
Well, it's great having you on the show, Jim, as we promised you that hour would go quick.
It has. It's been great.
So thank you for being on the show. And as always, Mike, it's always great having you on. And make sure everybody check out our website, find out when our next radio show dates are coming up in September, and other shows and everything that are on Spiritual Connections Radio. You've been listening to the Men's Spiritual Hour on Spiritual Connections Radio, and you can find us on the internet at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com, and all our shows are available for replay about 10 minutes after they're over. All right, Jim, thanks a lot, and have a great night, and good night, Mike.
Okay, thank you.
It's been my pleasure. Blessings to both of you.
Yeah, give our best to your wife, and I think we weren't sharing with everybody, but she's actually solo teaching the class in the Course in Miracles tonight.
All right, good evening, guys.
All right, good night, everybody.
And the cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repair. Wandering in my desert, your oasis refuses. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me I need to know. Do you remember? Gonna feel like